Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, David Chumi, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook, and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Wait, it's almost 1800 hours! Mm. I need to tune into Eagle FM! Business Economic Segment is about to play now!
Yes, listen to Business and Economic Segment with David Shombe from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade, and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Business and Economic Segment with me, David Shombe. 6 minutes past the hour of six, and this is a platform that we discuss affairs of bread and butter. And interestingly, there are a lot of things happening in the country, outside the country, and everything is attached to bread and butter. And today we'll be in the conversation with a locomotive technician, particularly when we are going to speak about trade, African continental free trade area. And also to ask a question to say, when you are speaking about Namibia readiness to trade continentally, how is our rail network? How is the trade? And how is our rail network operating? Do we have modern locomotive? And if we open, do we have enough logistics? Because once you open the borders, once you allow everybody to come and trade, and the free market is intensified, you are not only going to forget about having the best road in Africa, but remember that individuals will run to Namibia too. But in terms of one of the things that promote effective logistics in terms of trade is locomotive, is railways, and also modern trains. But that conversation, we are going to have it especially from the hour of 18:30 there. So we'll be discussing with Laza Vatrifa, locomotive technician, particularly when you speak about our trade infrastructure and also looking at 2026. And yeah, at home, politically, you know, it is stated that the SWAPO member of parliament, Erifas Dingara, has resigned as a member of parliament, and his tenure will come to an end at the end of this this month. And he is stating that it's voluntary resignation. And his politics, we yet to see how the development is going to be. But he was a good guy. He was a guy who was proposing each Namibia to get 1 million at some point. And, you know, I don't know if that project is still standing. The project is still standing. But stated that will also open a way to Christine Haindaka, who is Deputy Secretary of SWAPO Party Youth League, to get to Parliament, particularly in terms of line of, you know, going to Parliament. But there is a lot of questions, because there is a saying to say, in politics, one day is equivalent to 1 year. A lot of things can happen within a day. That's why it's quite surprising to see a person resigning at the beginning of the year. But we have to see if he's going to pursue other interests. What is that which is so interesting? Also more advanced than also an August house, or a person just decided to go and rest. You know, it's interesting to see. And looking at South Africa, it's very tough out there. Baron Mohotsi has been through a professional interrogation the whole day. And today he came wearing a suit. He came wearing a white suit. And, you know, still going on, still on. To realize, to say, there's a lot of things that we are going to hear. Especially when it comes to South Africa judicial system. Especially when it comes to South Africa police system. The security cluster. And also the whole system of public administration. And the man is talking, but he's cornered. And we had to see how things are going to come out. What are some of the recommendations of the ad hoc committee? No, it's just going to be a commission like any other commission. Because after every problem, There is always a commission. There was Zondo Commission. I don't know if the recommendation of Zondo Commission has been fully implemented, or it was just something to keep the public busy. But remember, all this commission, they are costly. The time, the sitting, the infrastructure, and also the experts, because although parliamentarians in SA are doing their work, you also be able to understand the time spent there, the reading or evidence leaders, the advocates there, the lawyers. And you're asking yourself to say, why do we spend so much time in fighting ourselves instead of sorting out the main problem and deal with real issues? If a person is found that a person is involved, why can't we just send the person straight to the judicial system? Or why can't, if the judge is not behaving, why can't we follow the line instead of this public commission? Maybe there will be results, because if you are on commissions, if you are on committee, then we'll see how the recommendation is going to be. And the question is also that is the president of South Africa going to be appearing at the commission, and who has that power to summon the head of state, and what will be some of the way forward, particularly regarding what have happened. And the guy who interested me is Cyril Ramaphosa. After all the chaos, the guy is smiling. He's very calm. He's one of it's the thickest skin. And those are the skin that are required in politics, to say, when you're in politics, you must have a thick skin. You must be strong. You can't just be a person who is stressed by an insult, or stressed by people who are gossiping you. If you have a small heart, even if you are brilliant and you get stressed by somebody who just spoke about you, or somebody who just called you a name, don't go to politics. Politics require resilience, thick skin, and also ability for you to focus on the real issues while you're also dealing with problems at home, because it's actually about dealing with problems. It's actually about dealing with challenges and problems. So, before we look at our guest today, there is actually something which I came close to, and I think it's very important, especially when Professor Jeffrey Sanchez was speaking at the recent AU summit. This one of international, it's not a pracademic, but it's a global leader. It's a political scientist, political economist, and it's a guy who can predict the future 20 to 25 years ahead. It's not a Sangoma, it's not a seer. Somebody who uses scientific methods, particularly political and economic tools that he has learned. And I understand that there are people who are called strategists, who can assist leaders. And there are people who can be able to see the future, analyzing the society to say, in the next 15 years, this is where Namibia is going to be. But looking at a guy like Professor Jeffrey Sanchez, it's one of a well-known guy. Somebody who wrote a book, Then It Manifesta, after 40 years. Somebody who should respect. And it's you guy who can be able to predict the future, looking at the current dynamics. And he spoke a lot of things, especially looking at Africa. But at the center of that, one of the things that he has stated is that African leaders must unite, or they must perish, because Africa, as we are speaking, potential is everywhere. And Africa is going to grow by 25% in the mid-century. And I want you to listen just shortly from Professor Sanchez, especially when he is giving us to say the only way to beat the world, the only way to move forward. And he spoke a lot of things, especially in this aspect of technology, also to say, do not think that agricultural technology will create more employment. It's actually going to reduce more jobs. And it's a paradox of AI, and also paradox of advanced technology. But let's look at a short commercial break, then we'll be able to listen to Professor Sanchez before we look at the conversation for today.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of
us. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, just to get to the context, especially when global economist is to speak, is giving you facts, what happened in Africa, what will happen moving forward, and it's a guy who is not scared of telling anybody. Maybe it's we can say it's a Western Maponga, because he's from America, but he's a well-known, respected leader. Just to listen to what he has to say about Africa. And you make your own conclusion, and you also need to see that we have a bigger project to accomplish, and you cannot do it alone in that.
This is the reality. Now, where does Africa fit into this? Let me start with the basic demographics. In 1950, Africa was 9% of the world population, around 250 million people in a world of 2.5 to 3 billion people. Today, Africa is 18% of the world population, twice the share of what it was in 1950, with 1.4 billion people. Today, Africa has the same population as China and India. But while China is now at a peak and is in population decline, that will be quite significant, by the way, during this century, so that China's population by the end of the 21st century will be under 1 billion people, maybe even below 800 million people. And India's population will stabilize at something like 1.7 billion people. Africa's population is so young that there is a tremendous population growth built in to Africa till the end of the century. So Africa's population will be 2.5 billion people at mid-century. That means around 25% of the world population. So from 9% to 18% today to 25% at mid-century. And at least on current trajectory, I think it's probably not correct, but on the current extrapolation, with a gradually declining fertility rate, Africa reaches about 3.7 billion people by the end of the 21st century. And that is about 35% of the world population. It may not reach that level because the fertility rate, in my view, will come down more rapidly than what is in this medium forecast of the UN. But Africa's population will reach 3 billion people. And that means that Africa will be a third of the world population, up from 9% in 1950. What about the economics? We are in a golden age of technology right now. We are in the most amazing acceleration of technological know-how in history. Everything has accelerated. If you launch ChatGPT 1 month, within the next month there are 100 million users. Within 6 months there are 500 million users. We've never had an uptake of technology at this speed in history. So if this technological know-how is properly utilized, the ability of Africa to achieve what China achieved, double-digit growth for four decades, is absolutely realistic. This is the main point. Africa can achieve a dramatic advance. What is happening in this city in Addis Ababa, which is exactly that kind of double-digit growth, so that if you come, as we do, each year to the AU summit, you see a city transformed from 1 year to the next. That can be Africa's general reality, not only in Addis Ababa, but across the continent. And incidentally, Africa's growth will be urban-based growth. Africa today is maybe, maybe 40 or 45% urban, although we have to be very careful on definitions because what is urban and what is rural is somewhat arbitrary in definition. And a lot of rural areas are really pretty urban already, with a lot of non-agricultural employment. But Africa will be 60 or 70% urban by around 2060 or 2070. And the basic reason, by the way, is that agriculture will be mechanized everywhere. Don't think that rising agricultural productivity means better jobs in agriculture. It means an elimination of jobs in agriculture, as it has everywhere in the world. In the U.S., which has the most advanced agriculture in the world, together with Canada, we have 1% of our population in agriculture. And Africa's share of the population in agriculture will decline to below 10%, probably within 30 or 40 years. And that means an urban Africa, and that means what you're observing in Addis Ababa, that will be true all over Africa. So think about the big cities and the regional cities. They will be the growth poles for this rapid economic development. What will it take for Africa to achieve this kind of dynamism? Basically, be like China. Or be like India. Unified, integrated structure, continental scale economy with a continental scale policy and plan. That's what it will take. If you have to do this 55 times, it won't work. And if you have to do this 55 times, once for each of the member states of the AU, by that time, you will be picked apart by the other powers. Africa will just become a divided corpse. So we'll do an autopsy in 40 years, not Africa at the center of the world economy. So Africa, first and foremost, needs to think at a continental scale and operate at a continental scale. And one of the reasons why I'm optimistic is that's happening. Yes, too slowly. It's frustrating. But there truly, really is an African continental free trade area. It's real. It's going to become more real. It could be operationalized a lot faster. It should be operationalized a lot faster. If my colleague, Dr. Hippolyte Fofak, who was chief economist of Afreximbank, gets his way, there will be an African Union currency, one currency for the continent. This is the right idea. This is practicable within the next 10 to 20 years, really practicable, and absolutely the right thing to do to make a continental scale economy. The second thing that Africa needs is, well, the second, third, and fourth is investment, investment, and investment. Three kinds of investment. Most important, please, every child on this continent should complete at least upper secondary school with real learning. So figure out how to do that. Give me a call. I have some ideas as well. Every child should have a device in their hand to be connected online. It can be a tablet, it can be a computer, it can be a smartphone, but they need to watch their classes online. They need to do assignments online. They need to have their AI personalized tutor helping them with that math problem online. It's virtually free to do this if you actually work out the capital costs. There should be no limits of teachers in rural areas or teachers that are underqualified or can't do a math problem, because we don't need the traditional delivery as the only delivery of education, right?
Yeah, that is it's part of the speech of Jeffrey Sanchez. He's a professor of economics. He's a political economist, and he's not new in international development. And the one thing which we think about is that there is something that, you know, can be done, and something that, you know, is not done. And when you speak about having all the resources in our hands and we are able to develop, that is something that can be done. And when something can be done, doesn't mean that it's going to be done. It requires a political will, and it also requires a continental approach, because looking at where the direction is going, where the conversation has been going, it's not the first time. It's not the first time people speak about African unity. It's not the first time we speak about African continental free trade area. But how can you speak continentally if you are constituency wise? Because we are not yet there. We are still speaking about I, and we are still speaking about, more external assistance than people that are at our neighbor. And somebody may ask a question to say, what could have happened if we have invested 10 years ago in refining of Angola oil? Where would we be now? We are just looking at, Angola is not even our neighbor, it's our brother. We are one family, we are cousins. Angola, we are one family. But why can't we intensify the economy with Angola? What is wrong with that? And it's like it's a distance from us, from SADC. Because if we are cousins, if we are brothers, we're supposed to start there before we go to intensifying of trade, because we are fragmented. And what he is indicating is that if Africa does not perish, if Africa does not unite, it's going to perish actually in 40 years. He indicated that not the Western power, the external power will just collect the corpse and conduct autopsy. But these are the things that should be, or can be avoided, especially if we think continentally, if we have to prescribe to the aspect of saying, if we really want to move far, we really need to go together. Because, and we will dissect more on that topic, especially tomorrow morning, when we will look at the focus of African Development Bank, what have been done, and also some of the developmental aspect, and also the question of saying, are we our own enemy? Are we also our own enemy? We speak about one thing, then we do completely the opposite of what we speak about. We want one thing, then we completely do the opposite of what we speak about. Because And it's really, I don't know how we do it in terms of implementation, because if you look at focus report, focus study on South Africa, on Namibia, on Kenya, on Botswana, you realize that some of the things, especially in terms of recommendation on economic development of the country, some of the recommendations still maintain, still the same. Some of the recommendations still the same. Strengthen your institution, diversify, don't depend on one product. Some of the recommendation has been like that for the past 5 years, but we don't do. Because that's why I'm saying this is Africa. It's a very diverse continent. And there is also maybe the point that we have missed, especially when we have a system that we are not able to use properly because we run away from our own indigenous knowledge. Because had we incorporated our indigenous knowledge, we wouldn't be here, because we find ourselves at the point where we want to fix the system, but you don't know who is the engineer of that system. Where did you leave your African values? Now somebody is coming and teaching us Ubuntu, but that is something that we should have taught the world. But now it's coming and teaching us to say, I'm who I am because of you. Therefore, moving forward, we have to go together. But is it going to happen when Nigeria is under fire? When Egypt and Ethiopia are not talking? When there is a silent fight and we don't speak about this between us and Lesotho, they are not following the line, especially when it comes to water. When other countries are not speaking with each other. When now DRC is becoming a free state. They just do not have recognized presidents. But you must understand that DRC lost its power in terms of controlling geographical land. It lost its power completely and lost its overall direction. And when you are saying you are presiding over the people of DRC, who actually are you speaking about? Are you speaking about people in the eastern DRC? Because if you look at the areas of Uvira and the Goma, there M23 is operating, and as a government too, and trade relations are happening. And you just ask yourself a question to say, is this going to happen? Is it going to be continuing like this? If you look at Somaliland now, it's not going to be another African country. But the interesting part is the way we do things at home. Are we cooperating with others? Do we like each other? And all those things, particularly at the continental level. So let's go to a short commercial break. Then we'll be in conversation with Laza Vatrifa, especially when we are speaking about trade infrastructure, to say, do we have trade infrastructure by the name of railways? Do we have effective locomotives that can be able to assist Namibia, especially in the time of need? We have showed our interest. We have showed our commitment. But are we ready? Even if our infant businesses are not ready, what about those who are trading with us? Where are they going to carry their things? Are they going to use our roads? And is the railway not a game changer? And then Transnamibia is very quiet. I don't know. Maybe they are coming. Maybe they are still coming. Very, very quiet. Now that we lost the airline, are we also going to lose the ground line? Which I don't think is going to be good. But where are we going in terms of that? But he'll be speaking from his perspective and experience, particularly dealing with locomotives. Let us come back shortly and stay tuned, because we are here under the hour of 1900 hours.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel.
Yeah, we are moving forward with business and economic segment, and today we are speaking about trade and also the use of railways. And I've been always asking myself to say, you know, when you look on social media, when you look on TikTok, people are taking selfies at cars, people are taking selfies traveling with planes, but even when you go on TikTok, you don't find Namibian train. You don't use it. Are they existing? Are they not existing? Are they operational? Are they in good shape? But in this aspect today, we are joined by Lazarus Riva. He's from the industry. He's a locomotive technician with quite numbers of experience. And just to give us context and also to connect with our ambitions for trade, to say, when we intensify with Africa Continental Free Trade Area, are we still going to use that railway or locomotives industry, or we are going to use other aspects? So, Raza, good evening, and thank you for joining us at Business and Economic Segment.
Yes, good evening, David.
Yes, let us look at the relevance of train. You are in the industry, but maybe just a general question. Where are we in Namibia in terms of the use of railways? Are you guys still operational? Are we still using railways in terms of personal and business? Maybe just give us context in terms of locomotives in Namibia.
Yes, we are still using railway.
Yeah.
Railway is still a relevant mode of transportation, especially for freight and logistics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, true, but it has declined compared to the decades past.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Namibian railway network has been moving good. It's moving good.
Mm-hmm.
And cargo.
Mm-hmm.
Ports like Babush Bay and Rudrit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it also connects mines, the industries, agricultural industries, export roads, and critical, those that are critical for trade.
Mm-hmm. So, do we still have a train that connects Namibia to Botswana?
It hasn't been operational for quite a number of years, but it's just a matter of reviving the rail.
Uh-huh.
The track. Yes, but I think there was a tender out recently that was supposed to revive that road to Botswana.
Mm.
Yes, I am not so informed as to how far it has gone.
Mm-hmm.
If the revival has begun, I am not so informed about that.
Okay, I just want the understanding also, because you deal, you service them, you work with them, you know that they're in and out, and you also travel maybe with them, and the connection to Kietman, I remember there was one of my friend who used to be at Kietman at that time. We were very young, and they are always happy to train, to travel with a train. And are we connected there, either for personal transportation or for business? Are we still connected?
Yeah, we, for business, is still working.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what happened is that with a locomotive, you cannot make, in Namibia especially, specifically, you cannot make money transporting
passenger people.
So it's a way of giving back to the community that one or an organization can give, like to, if they are to transport people. It's not that they are making money throughout it, but they can help the nation to transport them, to reduce the traffic on the road also. But it's not that they are making money through it. So, but we are still connected to Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not transporting passengers. They are not transporting passengers, yes.
Uh-huh. And to Angola?
Yes, we are also connected to Angola, the railway.
The Via Chicago?
Yes. No, we are not connected to Angola. We are just...
What was
we
the
just went until the border, but on the Angolan side,
mm-hmm.
That's not for us to worry about.
Uh-huh.
But Angola is not connected to us, but we are connected to Angola because mm-hmm. we went until the border.
Uh-huh. But that line is still operating.
The line is still operational, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, now let us look at modernization. I'm always impressed by Gauteng there. And people can say what they can say about the VP of SA.
Yes.
But one of the things that he did, especially when he was a premier there, Paul Mashatile, is industrialization. There is always Gautrain which is being presented out there, and which beat all these old locomotives. In terms of Namibia, if we have to think about the future, and especially from the aspect of trade, because we are looking at Africa Continental Free Trade Area, and people will be traveling a lot, especially if we open up our borders. Now, in that aspect, how does it work if somebody buy a, I don't want to say a smart train, but a more advanced train compared to what we have now?
First of all, you need to set up a structure that can accommodate that kind of train, especially the axle road mess, and also the how train you are talking about is an electrical train.
Yeah.
So you have to set up the structure that a specific kind of a train can run on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that will or supposed to take us years to structure up, but it's just a matter of how are we going to use it and where are we going to use it? How will it generate revenue for who is setting it up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's not something very difficult for.
Okay. Now, I think this thing we spoke about it, especially when it comes to skill transfer, to say, what model are we still using, in Namibia, especially when it's coming to trains? When was the last time maybe because you, I'm always looking at you with, either it's under the train, on top of the train, in the engine. When was the last time that, you have touched maybe a model of, 10 years ago in Namibia. Mm.
Of a newer train, a newer locomotive.
Yeah.
The latest we have is a Chinese locomotive that is called SDD6.
Mm.
It has a common engine, is very modern.
Mm.
Not so modern, but it's modern.
Okay, which year maybe?
I think it's a model of 2008, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
They are Chinese made.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, currently what is operational of those kind of locomotives is only one currently here in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one locomotive that I have seen operating on the rail that is of that time.
Mm.
Otherwise, we are using the U-23s and the C-23s. Mm. They are all General Electric.
Mm-hmm.
You can say Webtech.
Mm.
General Electric has recently moved from... They were bought out by Webtech. So it's an American company.
Mm-hmm.
We are still using... On our rail, we are still using the U-23s that are 50 to 60 years old.
Mm-hmm. And maybe for interest sake also, before we look at the trade, in terms of your industry, do you see a lot of young people in that industry? Because it's rare to find. I've been at a lot of places, and you ask a person profession, you are connecting. I did not meet somebody who's saying I'm a driver of a train. Or how do you call that person who operated a train?
It's a train driver.
And I did not meet. And I think it's only you and three other guys that I know. that are in that industry. In terms of the industry, is it shrinking or there is an area of growth, especially if you have somebody who is interested, you know, there is always somebody who is interested in taking challenges. Maybe it's in engineering, maybe it's civil engineering, or maybe it's that aspect of dealing with locomotives. How is the industry itself?
The industry is very well. Like currently what I've seen on LinkedIn, there is a company called Traction in South Africa. They are recruiting apprentices that want to take up this course that I took with Transamerica. They are asking for people who are interested on becoming a locomotive technician. Whoever wants to apply, you can go to LinkedIn, Traction LinkedIn, and then they can apply for that kind.
Now let us look at trade compared to other countries. Compare when you are in communication with other countries. What do you think is a barrier to effective railways? I don't want to ask you a question that is beyond your pay grade. Maybe the guys who are in the industry can be able to answer. From where you are standing, what do you think is a barrier? Because you are a technician, and I don't want to ask you about that. We have seen in the past 10 years or so, locomotives accident, they are falling. I don't know what was happening. Is it the model or is it just the driver? What caused our railway to decline so much? Is it investment or is it the nature of, or is it the model of the machines that we are using?
As something grows, like in age, it ages and it depilates, and at certain points you might not, even the supplier that suppliers use must, at certain points will run out of those. Because you are the only person who's buying of such certain stock. You understand? I hope you understand what I mean. So from my personal point of view, this is not confirmed, but I'm saying one thing that is setting us back is the kind of rolling element that we are currently using in the country. Is a little bit old, but it's reliable if well maintained. If you, because with a locomotive you can change, you can change it to a newer model, improve it as you go. Because it's a very expensive machine.
So you just need, how do you call those things that you connect? You just need the head, right? Like a truck, or how do you?
That one you call, is what we call a locomotive.
Or other things that you connect to, they are not important.
Those ones are just
you can
wagons.
Change them.
Those are just wagons that you can refurbish every time you as you go.
If I say somebody bought a train, you just bought a head.
If you bought a train, actually, it's wagons and the locomotive.
Okay.
When a locomotive is pulling wagons,
that's a train.
That's a train. So when it's just alone, when the head, what you guys are calling the head, is there. That's what we call a locomotive.
Okay. Now let us look at trading. I just want if you can also give me in terms of capacity, because there is always a debate to say we have the best roads in Africa. According to the latest statistics, but you also have a high number of accident. You know, our colleagues from MVF and are always complaining. But one of the things is that we have everything on the road. Now, if you have to speak in terms of just prediction, to say in terms of trucks, for examples, how many trucks can fit in one well functioning locomotives? Let me say this one, which are carrying beers, or they are carrying even meat.
One thing I can tell you is that volume that a train can carry. Okay, the number of trains that we currently have, which is around about 15 heads of locomotive or locomotive.
Mm.
It can carry up to estimation of 1.5 million tons in a year to 4 million. To 4 million.
Okay.
So if you can, I'm not so sure. I'm not so informed about the trucks themselves. I'm not sure if, how many tons we can
already get a prediction, because if you can put those small cars which are 2 tons, you already understand that how many there will be in one line, and this is quite a huge volume. Now maybe just from your experience, because you are not in trade compared to other countries, what is different between Namibia and other countries that are using locomotives, and where do you think we have we need to improve? One day you are not going to be a technician forever. One day you are going to be the head of an industry. Maybe what are some of the future growth in that industry if it has to be upgraded?
The SADC standard of rail that is 18, I think it's 18.5 the axle mass. So, and also we must improve on our rolling element. We must also improve our track. We must connect our track to our neighboring countries, especially the landlocked countries like Zambia, Botswana, those countries. And also, one thing I must advise, we must open the rail for private companies. Not only it shouldn't be only Transnamibia also operating on the rail, because at a certain point this is a government funded institution. So at times it doesn't have capacity to fulfill what is needed. If people want to move their, you know how expensive it is moving fleet on a rail to moving it on the road. So if we open up this rail to private entities, it will boost our economy, I think, maybe diversify what we are currently.
I think it's a very interesting thing, because logistic in that aspect we are lacking. So, Lazar Matrifa, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for input.
Okay, thank you, Mr. David.
All right. Yeah, that is from locomotive industry. Every day we are learning. A train is locomotive plus wagons, and it's not only the head, and there is a difference actually between a train and the locomotive. If you say David bought a locomotive, just bought that the head that you see. But we speak about modernization, and that is something that we should not ignore, especially when it comes to transportation. Because if we invest in that, to say why Transnamib and why can't we allow other private sector to engage into that, particularly in terms of logistics. Because remember, this logistics thing can become also more complicated and expensive if we transform it. I know it's going to disrupt those who use trucks, but trucks can also become dangerous, especially in some neighboring countries. You see our brother. Remember, there was a guy that I went to school with. At one point, he was kidnapped, and it really shocked us, traumatized us, especially in that aspect of logistic to South Africa and other countries. But if you have one train, that one is easy to control. It's also easy to load, and the train does not just stop anyway. And it's a big thing. You cannot hijack a train unless you watch a lot of movies, which is not going to be practically possible. But in terms of that, I think that is also the line that we need to look at. Because remember, if you trade with the world, if you trade with the continent, you must be able to open up all your channels to say, why do we have railways that we are not using? Why did we stop transporting people? Maybe we can also reduce numbers of accidents that we see, because having the best road in Africa did not prevent us to perish when we are using that the best road that we have. But if we are so strategic enough, so we can diversify, then we can be able also to find a way on improving our transportation. So we have, it's 56 minutes past the hour of 6, and you can still engage us in the studio, 083-288-401-083-288-401. So you can be able to air your view, air your opinion, and also give your constructive criticism. And from here, I think we'll be continue watching what is happening in SA, particularly at the NATO committee, and also through Madlanga Commission, and also to see what we are going to learn from this aspect, to say if we have to protect the institutions of the state, where do we need to start, and also what is the best mechanism. They also need to send Namibians to SA to go and benchmarking, because want to say something, it's already this aspect people use, if they want to travel, to say, no, we are going to see the best practice. But we have seen the best practice over for more than 36 years. What can we do about that lesson that we have learned? So, dear listeners, it's a conversation on economic development. It's a conversation on transportation, to say where Namibia is going. We are not moving backward. We are moving forward in terms of Africa Continental Free Trade Area. And the question has always been to say, what is a differentiating factor? Is Continental Free Trade Area, are we prepared for it, or we just want to get into it? Did we prepare our people? Are we really sure that when you open up our borders, when you connect to the world, Namibian problems will be solved? Or we still need to strengthen our people? Because still now, while we are speaking, the impact of 2024 drought is still hitting. The impact of 2024 drought is still hitting, and there are still farmers that did not recover from that impact of 2024 drought, regardless of all those assistance. And even when we are standing now, must be able to understand that the aspect of unpredictability in terms of weather pattern is still persisting, and we still lack in terms of producing our own food, especially when we have a clear goal of, food sustainability. We need to look at that content, especially when you look at Africa Continental Free Trade Area, and you must be able to know that until now, we are still contemplating, especially in signing the Pan-African Payment and Settlement System, that Namibia should sign, and BON should assist us. What is the problem if other countries have signed? If you are told that Africa is losing around $5 billion every year due to transaction in terms of foreign currency, why can't we start and deal with that problem? Why is time so that we can be able to fix our state, and we can be able also to make sure that when it comes to trade, either cross-border trading, continental trading, we are only using one method on time, Pan-Africa Payment and Settlement System, that will keep that $4 to $5 billion at home. Because the more we get investment we are getting, the more we are also losing. But dear listeners, this brings us to the end of our conversation. And from me, David Shombe, bye-bye for now. See you around, and sharp, sharp.